Welcome to chilly New Orleans. Welcome to our session on fighting for fluoridation and the new HHS guidelines, our role and responsibility in the national and local perspective. When we originally put this together, we were expecting the new HHS guidelines to be out, and I thought it'd be a great opportunity to bring everyone up to date. Who knows when it's going to come out, but I would hope by the end of 2015 it will be out. My name is Myron Aloukian. I'll be the moderator for this session. Interestingly, in 2 months, it will be 70 years since community water fluoridation began in this country in Grand Rapids, Michigan, to see if the adjusted fluoride level of about one part per million would give the same health benefits that natural fluoridation has shown for generations in our country. Today, we have more than 210 million Americans, more than 74% of those living on public water supplies, living in fluoridated communities. Now, in spite of thousands of studies showing the safety, health, and economic benefits of water fluoridation, it is being challenged every day in our country in various communities on the local and state level. Every day, Americans are being misinformed about the safety and benefits of fluoridation on the internet and social media. A study we did recently showed that the anti-fluoridation website has 5 to 60 times more traffic on fluoridation, against fluoridation, than the ADA and CDC websites related to fluoridation. Today we have a very distinguished panel of experts to bring us up to date on various aspects of fluoridation from their perspective, and I'm very pleased to have them here today. Now, we've asked them to speak for only 15 minutes each. Each of them could speak for at least an hour, hour and a half, if not all day. But to us, we want to get a dialogue, we want Q&A, so we're limiting them to 15 minutes. So we may have to cut them off at the last minute, but they're all prepared. Our first speaker is Dr. Barbara Gooch. Barbara is the Associate Director for Science in the Division of Oral Health at CDC, where she is the Senior Consultant on Dental Public Health Issues, including prevention effectiveness. She serves on the HHS Federal Panel on Community Water Fluoridation. She's a graduate of Harvard School of Dental Medicine and the University of Pennsylvania School of Public Health. She has been a Robert Wood Johnson Research Fellow at UCLA, and she's a diplomate of the American Board of Public Health, Dental Public Health. I'm very pleased to introduce now Dr. Barbara Gooch. Barbara.
Well, I'm very happy to have this opportunity to provide you an update on the science and rationale for the proposed recommendation from the Public Health Service. And I need to disclose that I have no personal financial relationships with commercial interests relevant to this presentation. I want to give a brief overview of the issue. First, recommendations for fluoridation were established by the U.S. Public Health Service in 1962, and they ranged from 0.7 to 1.2 milligrams of fluoride per liter of water. Lower concentrations were recommended for warmer areas and higher concentrations for cooler geographic areas. This range was based on studies conducted in the 1950s that found that children drank more tap water on warm days. And may I add that that actually is a common sense approach, too, that one would think that children would drink more tap water on warm days. But interestingly, more recent studies have not found outdoor temperature to be an important driver of water intake among children. In 2010, an interagency interdepartmental panel of federal scientists reviewed relevant evidence to update the 1962 recommendation. And in January of 2011, HHS proposed that the recommended concentration of fluoride in drinking water to prevent tooth decay be set at a single level of 0.7 milligrams per liter, which is the lowest end of the range. And the intent of that action was to balance the health benefits of preventing tooth decay across the lifespan in both children and adults while reducing fluoride exposure in children. I know you're all interested in the status of the recommendation. Currently, the recommendation document is in HHS clearance. The recommendations document is somewhat different than, or should I say it's different than what appeared in the Federal Register notice, because now it also includes a summary and response to the public comments. In addition, it also reflects changes that were made subsequent to external peer review by experts in toxicology, oral epidemiology, and environmental health. You'll probably be quite interested to know that the recommendation has been widely implemented. By the summer of 2011, just 6 months after its announcement, almost 68% of persons served by fluoridated community water systems had a concentration of 0.7 milligrams per liter. About 28% remained at 1 milligram or above, and although we don't have hard evidence, we assume that many of those have their level set in statute or other form of regulation, and they're waiting for a final recommendation. Let's look at the background related to policy. It's important to note that there is no federal requirement to fluoridate, so states and local communities must weigh the science about the risks and benefits when considering whether to fluoridate or not. And these decisions, as many of you are aware, are often made by elected officials or by a public vote. CDC's role is to monitor both the public health benefits, especially when other caries preventive measures are available, and also the risks of community water fluoridation. And I want to state that throughout this presentation, community water fluoridation will be abbreviated as CWF. Documented risks for community water fluoridation are limited to dental fluorosis. Also, anticipating the need for data, the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, or NHANES, now includes testing of home water samples for children and adolescents, and that's testing for fluoride content, questions about other exposures to other sources of fluoride, such as toothpaste, supplements, and mouthwash, as well as measures of tooth decay and fluorosis. And these data will support future analyses at the individual level. Water fluoridation certainly was an important modality and intervention that is responsible in part for this great reduction in dental caries in the United States during the second half of the 20th century. Here we see declines in the prevalence of tooth decay and in severity as measured by the DMFT. And to orient you, prevalence is on the left-hand side of the screen as a percentage. DMFT, or decayed missing and filled teeth, those are mean numbers of decayed missing and filled teeth. You can see that the prevalence decreased from the early 1970s, from 90% of adolescents having at least one decayed missing or filled tooth to 60%, and the mean number of decayed missing and filled teeth went from 6 on average to less than 3. So it's certainly been a very notable improvement in oral health in the United States. Despite this great success, however, dental caries still remains a highly prevalent, common chronic condition. 1 in 4 children from low-income families has untreated decay, and untreated decay, as you are well aware, can be associated with pain. It can also reduce quality of life, and it can reduce a child's ability to succeed. In a nutshell, what are the benefits of community water fluoridation? Well, available evidence indicates that community water fluoridation reduces tooth decay by about 25% in persons of all ages, and this is when you take into account other sources of fluoride and other fluoride exposures. Also, a relatively commonly quoted phrase based on CDC work has been that every dollar spent on community water fluoridation saves $38 in dental treatment costs. So what are the risks of fluoridation? Well, fluoride ingestion, as I already mentioned, while teeth are developing under the gums, can result in dental fluorosis, which is a visually detectable change in the tooth enamel. And this generally, children are only at risk for the development of fluorosis from birth through age 8 years. exposure to fluoridated water increases a child's chances for mostly mild forms of fluorosis, and we've included some photos of what mostly mild dental fluorosis looks like. Shown here is lacy white markings on the teeth. And in their most recent evidence review, the Community Preventive Services Task Force found no evidence that fluoridation results in severe dental fluorosis with pitting and staining of the teeth. I want to briefly review the main reasons for the proposed change that was made or proposed in 2011. First, fluoridation remains an effective and cost-effective intervention to improve the oral health of communities. Drinking water is now one of several sources of fluoride. With access to more sources of fluoride, there has been an increase in the prevalence of mostly mild dental fluorosis among younger persons in the U.S., and at the proposed fluoride concentration of 0.7 milligrams per liter, it is likely that fluorosis will be lowered and caries prevention maintained. And finally, recent studies have not found that outdoor air temperature is an important predictor of water intake among children. Let's take each of these reasons and just briefly go through the supporting evidence. First, in 2013, the non-federal Community Preventive Services Task Force updated their review of evidence of effectiveness that was originally released in 2001. Consistent with their earlier review, the task force found strong evidence that fluoridation is effective in reducing tooth decay among children and adolescents. There was an increase in the percent of children that were caries-free. There was a decrease in the mean number of teeth affected by caries. And based on strong evidence of effectiveness, that the prevalence of caries was substantially lower in communities with fluoridation, the task force recommends community water fluoridation. If we turn now to adults in a systematic review completed by CDC scientists, we also found that fluoridation was effective among adults. This study included a meta-analysis of 5 cross-sectional studies published after 1979. That's significant because other sources of fluoride were available at that time, such as toothpaste and mouth rinses. And tooth decay was reduced by 27% for those with a lifetime residence in a fluoridated versus a non-fluoridated community. In terms of cost-effectiveness, there had been 2 systematic reviews completed again by the Community Preventive Services Task Force. Both found community water fluoridation to be cost savings in all the included studies. In addition, several studies at the state level have compared Medicaid costs for treatment of tooth decay in fluoridated and non-fluoridated communities. In Louisiana, for example, mean treatment costs were $67 lower among preschoolers living in fluoridated versus non-fluoridated parishes. And a similar analysis in New York State that looked at the cost of caries-related procedures found that among children and adolescents, those living in fluoridated versus non-fluoridated communities had lower costs. So let's turn to the prevalence of fluorosis. Data on dental fluorosis comes from NHANES 1999 to 2004. And overall, among persons 6 to 49, about a quarter or 23% had dental fluorosis. And as I mentioned before, the dental fluorosis is in the milder forms. Prevalence, however, was higher among younger persons and ranged from 41%. And I don't think I have a laser highlighter here, but nonetheless, there it is. 41% among those 12 to 15. To 9% among those in the highest age group of 40 to 49. And it's very likely that the higher prevalence of fluorosis in younger persons reflects the increase in fluoride exposures across the U.S. population since the 1960s. Also, data indicate that caries prevention can be maintained and the risk of dental fluorosis reduced at 0.7. The 1986-87 survey of children's oral health in the U.S. has been the only national survey that assessed child's water fluoride exposure, shown here on the x-axis, and could link that exposure to measures of caries experience and measures of fluorosis, shown in blue. Findings indicate that there was a gradual decline in caries from negligible to 0.7, and that reduction plateaued between 0.7 and 1.2. In contrast, the percentage of children with dental fluorosis increased with higher levels of fluoride in water. I want to turn now to safety, and I know that Dr. Pollack is going to address this in greater detail, but I do want to emphasize that under the Safe Drinking Water Act, another federal agency, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, sets a standard for the highest concentration of naturally occurring fluoride that is allowed in public water supplies. That standard is set to protect against risks from exposure to too much fluoride, and the current maximum contaminant level, or MCL, is set at 4 milligrams per liter to protect against stage 3 skeletal fluorosis, which is a very rare condition in the U.S. Under the Safe Drinking Water Act, reviews are required for all regulated water contaminants, including fluoride, every 6 years. And EPA is continuing its review of the maximum amount of fluoride allowed in drinking water to determine whether it is appropriate to revise the standard. And their review is based in part on scientific assessments that they also released in January of 2011 that consider new data on severe dental fluorosis and updated relative contribution of all fluoride sources to total exposure. At the request of EPA, the National Research Council also undertook a comprehensive multi-year review of adequacy of EPA standards to protect public health. Findings were published in 2006, and these provide the most comprehensive summary of unwanted effects. Please note that the HHS panel reviewing community water fluoridation accepted this extensive review as the summary of hazard. The review focused only on potential adverse effects of naturally occurring fluoride in drinking water at concentrations of 2 to 4 milligrams per liter, a level notably higher than that recommended for fluoridation. At these high concentrations, the NRC committee found substantial evidence, and this is important, only for an increased risk of severe dental fluorosis. The NRC noted, however, that on average, the prevalence of severe dental fluorosis is near zero in communities where the level of fluoride in drinking water is under 2 milligrams per liter. I think Dr. Lukian already reviewed these data, but this graph just shows the increase in the U.S. population in the light blue, the persons served by community water fluoridation, by community water systems in the dark blue, and the population receiving fluoridated water, and these, of course, are limited to persons who are on community water systems. And as he noted, by 2012, more than 210 million people in the U.S. were receiving fluoridated water. I will just close with a slide showing the support for water fluoridation across public health, dental, and medical organizations. Thank you.